Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Thursday, the 18th of November, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Shane Byrne is with us to preview Ireland versus Argentina as Ringrose & Co look to pick up where they left off.
Oh, it's a great sign when the final whistle goes and no one wants to leave their seats from the supporters. So you're right, it's those brief windows. And it's for 20 minutes, half an hour to really soak it up and enjoy it.
We also have tickets to Sunday's Clash to give away. More on that shortly. And we'll continue our grassroots focus this week with today's spotlight on underage rugby. Lisa Fallon is in Studio 2 to preview the Women's FAI Cup Final, plus her thoughts on Jack Byrne's reported Rovers return and Stevie G's first Premier League press conference.
What will it feel like for you going back to Anfield in 3 weeks' time?
I think everyone knows around the world what Liverpool means to me, but the focus and my commitment is very much on Aston Villa. And I said last week in a one-to-one that I'm all in, and I can promise our supporters that's the case.
We'll also check in with Jeff Shepherd as Aaron Rodgers makes more headlines and the NFL bring in tougher COVID rules for Thanksgiving. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, Lisa Fallon is with me here in studio, but before I get to my chat with Lisa, I do have a competition. It's an Ireland versus Argentina ticket giveaway. So Canterbury, the official kit partner to Irish rugby, has revealed the new Ireland rugby home and alternate jerseys that will be worn throughout the season ahead. Both the men's and women's team replica jerseys are available now in store at IRFU's official sports retail partner, Intersports Elvries, or on elvries.ie, or on Canterbury. The home jersey had its first run out in the win over the All Blacks and will be worn again against Argentina on Sunday. So we have a pair of tickets to give away to that game, and all you have to do is text 51552 with your name and the answer to the following question. What Argentinian great is now backs coach with Leinster Rugby? So do get your texts in, because no doubt that will be an absolute cracker, as the Ireland-Argentina games usually have been in the past. So Lisa Fallon is here with me. Lisa, we heard Stevie G there. Liverpool fans everywhere are a bit torn, because obviously Jurgen Klopp is doing a fantastic job. Stevie G seems to be ultimately auditioning for the job in time. He's trying to bat away that suggestion, take the focus away from his Liverpool connections, but ultimately I don't think he's ever going to be able to do that.
Yeah, look, he's an iconic Liverpool player, and you know, once he goes on that managerial journey, it's always going to be linked, and he's not going to be able to avoid that. But you know, he did a really, really good job at Rangers, which was a tough job when he took it on, and the success that he's generated there has obviously led to him now being getting the Villa job. And look, it's unavoidable for him to have that link and to have that speculation, but for him this is a massive opportunity to manage in the Premier League, which is probably the toughest league in the world to manage in. And he really needs to stay focused, and I'm sure he will. And even listening to his comments in the press conference today, he's really determined to steer the focus away from Liverpool and back onto Villa, and obviously the job that he needs to do there. And listen, he'll have to have his eye on the ball, because he does have a bit of a job on his hands. You know, I think they've had 5 consecutive defeats, 2 points above the relegation zone. You know, he has some serious work to do in this job, and if he's not focused on it, it'll be a bigger problem for him than if he isn't.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you see what happened with Frank Lampard, and now every time we see a picture of Steven Gerrard, we're seeing Frank Lampard beside him, because Frank Lampard did get that opportunity for the big job, probably came a little bit too soon for him. And when you think that Gerrard has had that spell in Rangers and probably learned a huge amount about management without being under the glare that comes with being in the Premier League, he'll be able to take all that he's learned and try and build on that. But ultimately, it will be a huge pressured situation. But it will tell us probably quickly enough whether or not he has it in him to go on and be a Liverpool manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, during his time at Rangers, he will have learned so, so much. And as you say, it's a different kind of spotlight in Scotland than it is in England. And it was you know, a really good job for him to take, because there certainly was pressure. There's the big Celtic Rangers rivalry and all the connotations that that brings. It's a different dimension to a game, and he was able to get his team into those games and win them and really turn things around at the club. And he's the type of player that, because of his playing career at Liverpool, he understands big rivalries. But he's also experienced enough to know. And he, you know, I think it's really notable that he brought pretty much his entire backroom team from Rangers with him. So Michael Beale is a coach that would have been with Liverpool originally. Then he went to Rangers with him, and now he's gone to Villa. And I think you can't underestimate the fact there that he's got a really, really good core of people around him, people he knows really well, he's known for a very long time. And there are also people who know Liverpool Football Club very, very well. But look, their job now is very much on, is very much Aston Villa. And, you know, you're watching it today, and they've Brighton this weekend, and all people are asking them about is Liverpool in 3 weeks' time. Look, it's going to be unavoidable for him. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he does. Because he will have to hit the ground running, because there's no hiding place in the Premier League, and as many, many managers have found before him.
Yeah, and he'll be going into the Christmas run as well, and the games will be coming thick and fast. I did get a bit of I had a bit of a giggle today when I heard the reasons why he was taking the Villa job. The first one was to manage in the Premier League, and the second one was to be closer to his family. So he's got he knows exactly where his priorities are. Now, speaking of people returning to clubs, Jack Byrne, it has been reported that he will return to Shamrock Rovers for a second spell there. Unfortunately, things didn't really work out for him in Cyprus with Apoel. I don't think you can probably blame him for that, because he was only in the door and Mick McCarthy was out the door, so he was always kind of up against it. But it does feel like when he was with Shamrock Rovers, it was the right fit for him. It was the right fit for the club. We were seeing the best of Jack Byrne. He was in and around the Ireland team. He goes away to Cyprus and he just completely disappears under the radar. And it felt like it was almost a waste of his talent. But to see him now back again, and I think especially with Stephen Kenny in there and the focus that's on the League of Ireland as well, and the connection between the clubs and the Ireland team, it can only be good for him, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Jack Byrne, I know he is... Oh, I enjoyed watching him so much when he was at Shamrock Rovers. As much as we probably didn't like playing against him when we had to come up against him, he was a tough opponent. And they're generally the opponents that you really, really respect, as the people who are the hardest ones to play against. And Jack was that player, and he has so much in his locker, and he just brings so much dynamism and creativity to the way that Rovers play. And you wouldn't know where you'd find him on the pitch, and he's just so difficult to pick up, but so influential in how the patterns of game developed, and you know, just his touch, his vision, the way he could move the ball, change the points of attacks for a team. Such an exciting player. And I personally, as a League of Ireland fan, I'm happier to see him back in the league, because to have a player that quality and that talent in the league is great for the league. But you'd never how would you say it? You'd never take away from somebody the opportunity to go and do it and test themselves abroad. And I think he was really, really unfortunate, just the way circumstances played out. Particularly, you know, Mick McCarthy went over, brought him in with him, and then Mick's tenure just, you know, lasted a heartbeat there. So it was a very difficult situation for Jack. But to be fair to him, you know, he's, as you said, kept himself under the radar, but he's kept himself in the conversation. Stephen Bradley said recently, I think it might have been today actually, that he had kept in regular contact with him, and that shows you know, the respect that they had for each other. So look, to see Jack Byrne back in a Hoops jersey and back in the League of Ireland, I think will be great for all League of Ireland fans, albeit their teams probably, unless you're a Rovers fan, you won't want to necessarily have to play against him. But it's great to see him back, and if it is a move that comes off, then I think it'll be great. It'll be great for him, and it'll be great for the league.
It might not be great for his teammates though, because there's going to be a lot of competition now in that starting 11, trying to fit in the big stars that they have. Danny Mandrew was linked to Celtic earlier this week, but Stephen Bradley was asked about it today and he rubbished claims that he could be heading over there to join Liam Scales. But they have a huge amount of talent in that team.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, if you want to win a league, you need that. You need competition. four places. You can't have anyone in the team that just feels that their place is guaranteed, because that's where players get into comfort zones and complacency can start to come into performances. So, you know, the one thing you have to do even after you win is, you know, you're going to have to be better next year than you were the year previous. And that's the nature of it, because everybody will be wanting to pursue them and to catch Rovers next year. And I think, you know, with the takeover at Dundalk, you know, they're back in local supporters' hands. Dundalk will be a different entity next year. Derry City are going to be a serious entity. You've Pats, you've Sligo. Listen, it's going to be so competitive, Bose. But I think, you know, you need that competition, and Jack will definitely dial the standard of training and the drills and the competition for places. That'll be dialed up if he comes back into the squad. And look, Rovers will be settled. I think Stephen said today that the only person leaving, he's keeping the whole squad for next year, the only person leaving is Joey O'Brien, who of course has gone to Shelburne with Damien Duff in a coaching capacity. So you know, they're a settled team, but you do need to just drop something in just to put a ripple in the water, and Jack coming back would certainly do that.
There's so much to look forward to next season, and you've laid it out, a lot of it there, when then thrown in Damien Duff at the end as well. But just in terms of Shamrock Rovers, so Lisa, obviously you've seen so much of them and seen so much football and seemed so much of the league over the last number of years. They did face a little bit of criticism that maybe they weren't as impressive as they have been in the past, and that I guess they didn't put on that show. They just almost grounded out, really. And
sometimes that's what you have to do. Do you know what I mean? The best team always wins the league. That's the way it is, you know. And you have to win games in different ways. And you know, it was a strange kind of season, because when you didn't have fans and you're watching games on, you know, live streams, it's a whole different feeling. It's a whole different, I know myself from being at Galway, like, it's just so different when there's no supporters in the ground. It just, that connection, that feeling, that energy is just different. So I think, you know, once the fans were back in, you got a different feel for the league. And, you know, listen, you do what you do, and I always say at the end of the league, the best team does win the league. And but I think next season, with the supporters back and all the different and new personalities in around the league, I think it'll be teed up for and listen, it's not fully over yet. I know Rovers will get the trophy tomorrow night, but yeah, look, there are exciting times for the league ahead, and I think, to be fair to Rovers, I think they fully justified winning it this year.
Right, okay. Before we do take a quick break, very quickly, Rory McIlroy is leading the first round of the 8 million Tour Championship in Dubai after shooting a 7-under par 65. He leads by 2 shots from 3 players, and he was out speaking to the media, as he always does afterwards. But he was quite interesting in his attitude to where he's at right now.
I'm a big boy now. I've been around the block a bit. You know, and if I have problems or struggles, or you know, I should be able to sort them out myself, instead of looking to others to try to fix my problems. I'm just going to try to you know take responsibility a bit, and that's really what I did after the Ryder Cup. I put my head down, spent a lot of time just on the range, and you know, just figuring out, okay, what is it that I do well, what do I need to get back to. And I've always been a very visual player. I've always seen shots, and I mean, I don't know how much of the shot tracer was out there today, but people probably see me playing shots again. Maybe not quite as much as Bubba Watson, but still, you know, that's how I've always played golf and how I've seen the game. And I just needed to get back to seeing it like that again.
Rory McIlroy speaking there after his first round today. Lisa, the psychology of individual sports is absolutely fascinating. You're used to a team environment, so am I, but I've been exposed to so much more of it now because I've been working with Ruby Walsh. But you just need something different, really, to be able to operate at that level on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. I always remember the very first professional boxing match that I went to in the National Stadium. And it's so different watching it at home on TV to actually watching it and hearing the sound of the punches landing. And I remember years and years ago, I did an interview with Barry McGuigan about when he won the world title fight and how he knew inside the ring when he had it won that he had given a little body shot a couple of inches and it just landed, and he knew the ribs were gone. And he said Cruz, I think it was the only two in the whole arena that knew. And it was like that the psychology of the following rounds was just fascinating. And it is, you know, listening to Rory there, so much of it can come from your own mindset in terms of your thinking and overthinking, analysing, overanalysing, and the fine lines between it all. But it is, it's incredible. And it's so interesting listening to him there, you know, because it is, you know, a lonely place, despite there being a hell of a lot of people around you, that it is a lonely place when you're in those singular moments of performance. But it's always something that's really fascinated me is that, you know, because even in team sports, individual players have those moments, like a penalty or, you know, different moments of the game. Individual players will have those moments. But it's so fascinating. But I think it's so interesting listening to him and how he, as a golfer, has changed. And maybe even, you know, he's maturing and the way he speaks is so different now. And it's I think it's very interesting listening to him over the last number of years.
I sometimes wonder, is he, when he's saying things like, you know, I'm a big boy now, is he telling himself that? Like, is he talking to himself now? Are they the thoughts that he has been, you know, that he has decided upon, and they're the message that he has to communicate to himself? Because he is facing the media so often, he's on his own. He's on his own for all those hours as well, that it just must be such a big part of it, that psychological element of it. And I always notice it as well when I go to cover anything athletics wise. They're just always in this, as you said, kind of a singular zone. You see the headphones on, they're very much on their own. You can tell that they have to make the decisions. There's nobody around them that's going to tell them what to do. Like, obviously they have a team, but when they're in the moment, they can't look to anybody else. They just have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think becoming a parent has a big part of that, and I think you can hear that in him. I'm a big boy now, you know. It's something really crazy, like when you become a parent, everything in your life changes and your perspective.
I moved from credit phone to bill phone when I became a parent. That was my level of responsibility.
But it's so, but you know what I mean, it is like the way you think, the way you put context on things, everything changes when you become a parent. And I definitely think that Rory becoming a parent has changed him as a golfer and changed his mindset, and maybe put a little bit more context on some of the thought processes that he might have had previously. And then you just kind of go, nah, do you know what? It just gives you a little bit of context, I think, that different level of responsibility, and also that capacity to wonder, what did you do with all your time beforehand, you know? I think being a parent has probably had a big impact on the way his language and his thought processes are developing in the last year.
Yeah, because whether you like it or not, there is a bigger picture, and it's not all about you. Okay, let's take a very quick break, Lisa, and then we're back talking rugby.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
2FM.
Proudly supporting Stand Up Awareness Week against LGBTI+ bullying.
Come in at belongto.org. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is now time to turn our attention to rugby. Former Ireland player Shane Byrne is with us on the line. Shane, we're going to get straight into it. Are you still on a bit of a high from the Ireland-New Zealand performance? Are you thinking that maybe we're getting a bit carried away? What are your thoughts on it?
Not at all. Totally carried away. I'm still buzzing. Fantastic. What a performance. It was just mouth-watering all the way through it, from the attitude, from the kickoff. The energy they brought to it was just fantastic. And you know something, you could look at it a different way. They developed on from the game the week before. We saw a new style of play from Ireland that we hadn't seen in maybe ever, and less box kicking and the ball staying alive. And they brought that to New Zealand, which was an incredible achievement.
So what impressed you most about them then?
Composure. They, you know, to go in... We've seen, how many times have we seen it over the years? I've been involved in a few myself, where you have a really, really good first half against New Zealand, but they managed to pip you at the end of the first half, and they go in ahead, and then it's just they settle into the game and they start pushing away from you, and that just didn't happen. The energy sapping way that Ireland were playing and pulling the energy away from New Zealand just continued in the second half. Their mindset, whatever was said to them at halftime, must have been absolutely superb. Like, you know, with the talk with the Paul O'Connell effect, whatever it is, it's working, because, you know, to go out that mentally strong again and to do it again against New Zealand. And New Zealand, every team has a purple patch. Every team comes good at some point or another. And they didn't. Like, including the tries that they got, okay, there were amazing individual plays and set-piece moves. But the simple fact was, it was almost against the run of play. Because for that 80 minutes, you could say, Ireland were in control of that game. And New Zealand were absolutely exhausted at the end, which was just something that, you know, yes, I, you know, you could say I felt it in my waters that there was something good going to happen, but in no way did I imagine it was going to be a game of that calibre.
You just wonder, though, you said they were exhausted, but were they exhausted going into it, though? I mean, was it a case, and it's been pointed out quite a bit, that, look, they're at the end of a very long tour, they probably are mad to get home, they're probably a little bit fed up, and, you know, they're not a New Zealand that we're going to be seeing when things really matter.
So?
Let's take the win.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, you know, it's international rugby. That's test rugby for you. Like, they have probably the most talented squad of players, you know, that there is around. You know, you would normally say that. Right the way through, they could pick, and they have that again, they could pick another squad and still have a fantastic squad, because that's the quality they have, that's the depth that they have. And they picked an unbelievably experienced team going out, that the best team that they could put out. And these guys are seasoned internationals. And no matter what way you are, no matter what, you know, mindset you are at the end of a tour, start of a tour, middle of a season, when you're playing international rugby, that's all part. Because when you realise that you're in a battle, which they were right from the off, you know, the quality stands up. But so I wouldn't accept anything that they weren't quite what they should have been. It was more so that Ireland stopped them being the players that they can be.
So the hope is that they're going to keep building now on the last couple of performances. They have Argentina at the weekend. They won't have Jonathan Sexton, and they won't have Jemison Gibson-Park. Both are ruled out injury. Jack Carthy and Luke McGrath have been called up to the squad in their place.
Great to see Carthy getting in, yeah.
Big time, yeah. So we know there's going to be changes in a couple of positions. Do you anticipate there have been many changes from Andy Farrell?
Yeah, this is a really hard thing now. You know, this is going to be a real test for Farrell, because coming off a game like that, you would love to see, in some way, because it is November Internationals and we want to see the guys, you'd love to see quite a few changes, because there's guys who you want to see more of, Ryan Bird, Gavin Coombs, Balakum, you know, all of these guys, you'd love to see Frawley getting a go, getting a start, getting a bit of experience under the belt. But unfortunately, Argentina are not that kind of opposition. Any other time we've played New Zealand, we've had a step down afterwards. But the way these internationals are going, Argentina are a serious challenge. So I could see a handful of changes, as you already mentioned, two of them are already forced. But I can't see a huge amount of change. There could be a huge amount. They could swap the front rows, you know, completely. You know, there's plenty of experience there. You know, there's so many things that he could do, but he has to resist that temptation, I feel, because what we've built in that game last week and in the Japan game the week before is a style of rugby that we need to see that going forward, and we need to see that being continued on. And I feel he just has to resist making the sweeping changes, even though all of these players, you'd love to see them all start. You'd love to see them all get plenty of time on the pitch. But Argentina, okay, they haven't had great. They had an easy enough win against Italy. They had a superb just loss against France the week before, where you probably saw the real Argentina. And, you know, they are very, very dangerous still. And they're a side to be beaten. And that's the one thing you don't want to happen, is after what we achieved last week, for that to slip away in a loss. The win against Argentina is very much, you know, within this squad, and he just has to be careful on the team that he picks.
Yeah, I guess maybe we might have a clearer picture after this weekend as well about what his plans are, and because I'm sure he has a plan now for the World Cup, which will come around pretty quickly, and whether or not he's going to focus on that or focus on every single game that comes along.
Here we are peeking in the middle of the World Cup travels. Here we go again, yeah.
Right, well, we will have a team announcement tomorrow, so it'll be interesting to see what he does go with. Right, let's move on to the women's game, because they did name their team today for Saturday's test with Japan, and we know now that Ciara Griffin will captain Ireland. It'll be her final game before she retires at just 27 years of age, Shane. It is almost mind-boggling to think that we are going to lose a 27-year-old captain of Ireland at the top of her game, and knowing as well that although we take it at face value that she is putting her family and her career and everything first, at the same time, there is an undercurrent there. There is a reality there that things are not where they should be when it comes to the way the women's game is treated in this country by the IRFU.
No, there's a couple of things in there. And like, it's such a shame to hear that they're not going to release the findings of the I know there's probably a lot of reasons for that. It's not just as straight, but it just gives out the wrong message. Look, it's been a very, very rough time for them. Like, firstly, let's just say Ciara Griffin, fantastic, and everything she said. I think she's been a fantastic ambassador for the game, brought so much to it. The praise that she's got from all the ex-players, and also you know, not just from the women's game, from the men's game as well, and she seems to be doing it with very much pride for all the right reasons. That's in her head. It seems to be something that she's thought about and very settled about it, which is, you know, fantastic to see. But yes, it is an awful shame that women's rugby find themselves in this again. And we hear, you know, back to the team that had to drag themselves around France after, you know, getting trains, planes and automobiles to get down to a game in the south of France. But they went on, it galvanised the squad under Philip Doyle, and they just became a much bonded side that ended up achieving amazing things, as we know, amazing runs in the World Cups, and winning the Grand Slam, winning the Six Nations. And, you know, hopefully we're at the start of this. There's going to be a new management structure brought in, and the women's, they had a very positive win last week, but it is a long, hard road, and they really need support now, and that's just what I just feel. It should be just unconditional at this stage. We saw the outpouring of, you know, emotion for them, in support of them, right across the rugby world, and I think that just has to continue, and hopefully this weekend they can keep going with that.
Yeah, so Adam Griggs has made 8 changes to that game for Japan, and a lot of them were because some of the girls are heading away to Dubai with the Irish Sevens, and there's some of the big stars like Stacey Flood, Bavin Parsons, who we saw scored that unbelievable try.
Even that is a fantastic try, it's even in that, it's just that their schedule, their itinerary just seems to be haywire. Like, they play their interprovincials, you know, without so many of their stars, but they play them at the very start of the season. Like, that just isn't conducive to anything good in rugby and getting prepared for the rugby game. And here we all go again. Like, they're playing an international versus Japan, and, you know, they're missing heap of players because of other representatives of rugby.
Yeah, it does feel like here we go again. But Shane, it isn't all negative. I was at that game last Friday night in the RDS against the USA, and I sat beside, just coincidentally, Joe Shine, who was an underage coach for St Mary's, and we got chatting and he started to tell me all about the women's game in Mary's and how the numbers are growing. So he's actually on the line here as well. I just thought it was a good news story. Joe, how are you? First of all, thank you very much for coming on. And I think since I met you last Friday, I must have told, I'd say, about 25 people all about you and what you're doing in St Mary's, and to hear that you have so many girls up there. I think you told me 70 girls with the hope of getting to 100. It's pretty phenomenal, just given all the conversations that have been so negative about the game and the issues at numbers and the lack of structures at grassroots and all that. Just tell us a little bit, Joe, about the club and how you got the girls' game going.
Thank you very much for having me on, Marie. I got involved in St Mary's there, where my little fella played 3 years ago. And we had 3 girls at the under sixes at that stage. Then for a number of reasons, I had an older girl, Matilda, who wanted to play rugby in St Mary's, but when we went looking for her group age, there was no other girls on the whole team. Now, then after that, the following year, I became the kind of lead coach for the under sixes, and we kind of started to push the word around about girls, and we got lots of new joiners to come in, and we ended up with a girl with at the end of the season with about 12 girls on the squad, which was, you know, a massive improvement on where we had been. And then this year, as the former under sixes coach, we have to set up again. The under sixes coach has to set up the next year coming in, and we managed to recruit up to 17 girls already with under sixes. So we can see that there's huge kind of appetite in the community to bring in girls. And since then, we've kind of grown, and we've used the IRFU resources with the Leinster branch and the IRFU Give It a Try program. We've now grown to over 76 girls as of this morning, which is in excess of our target for the year. So we've had to move up that target now to get to 100 girls for the end of the season. So things are going really, really well. We've got good connections with some of the other Dublin clubs. And you know, this is a kind of an evolving thing. So I apologise to other clubs in Leinster that we haven't included, but we're trying to get ourselves sorted out first. So we've kind of set up ourselves with our own mini league with the guys out in Seapoint who have done a wonderful job, and De La Salle, Parmesan, Old Belvedere, the usual Dublin clubs. And we've got, you know, four or five games coming up now in the next couple of months. And we've really managed to grow our numbers quite dramatically. But it's been a hard slog, and we need good recruitment, and we keep, and thank you very much for having us on the show, because hopefully this can drive more girls into the various clubs, and we can all get better together.
So, Joe, what have the challenge has been? Because I know there'll be people sitting at home listening to you, and they'll have sons playing, and they'll think, right, well, if Joe can do that up in St Mary's, then why can't I do it in my club? So what have you learned along the way? Like, what advice can you impart to anybody that would like to emulate what you're doing?
Well, one of the problems that I have is I'm obviously a boy. So, you know, we're trying to get as many girls involved as we can, right? And a lot of the clubs are still very heavily dependent on men. So, you know, we do have a fairly strong, if you can see it, you can be it kind of culture up there. So we've managed to recruit quite a lot of women coaches and mothers who've, you know, we've converted into coaches as well. And that's kind of helped a lot. We've been kind of bringing the girls along to the Leinster Interprovincial Series, and as I say, the Irish match against USA last week, again, you know, showing them where they can get to. We don't have a great structure in here in Ireland at the moment. There is the AIL going, but, you know, how do we show, and how do we give young girls of 8, 10, 12, you know, a sense of fun, a sense of day out, and a sense of aspiration? Well, I think it is going to those kind of interpro games and showing them where we can get to. We're also kind of trying to design an off-pitch program, and, you know, I hope to be bringing the girls to Barrett in the end of May in St Mary's. Yeah, well, in St Mary's, all our boys have gone to Barrett, and it just seems fair that, you know, we offer that across. And again, it's a recruitment tool, but it's a fairly good, strong inducement to get them across.
So, Joe, what do you need then? Because we've had so many conversations about the top level and what the national team need and what they should be getting, and the structures that are there that aren't working out. For you guys at the grassroots who are just getting things going, what do you need from the IRFU and from the Leinster branch? What can be done to make it better?
Well, they are putting their best foot forward. So we've been invited into four schools now. That I went into my kid's school on Monday. I'm going into another school next Monday. And we've also got lined up two further schools this side of Christmas. And we'll be in there kind of trying to recruit all the girls. So the IRFU make the introduction. They kind of set up a small program inside with the PE classes, and then they bring us in to try and convert girls across into the club to be kind of full-time players. I think one thing that we need to be conscious of in rugby is that, you know, a lot of these girls at kind of 8, 10 and 12 already have a sport, and maybe rugby can be everyone's second sport, and we can convert them along the way, and as they increase their awareness and increase their enjoyment of it, we can bring them across. So, I mean, that's on us. Again, the IRFU run these very good Give It A Try programs, which are kind of an 8-week kind of crash course in rugby, mainly set up for kind of 12-year-olds and older. But again, it's a great way of getting in and getting involved. But I do think, you know, the clubs then themselves have a lot to offer. You know, 50% of the population are girls. 50% of the club members have daughters. We're not seeing 50% of the club, of those club members come out on the rugby pitch. The GAA, hockey and soccer have done a much better job than we have, and we are a little bit late to the party, but, you know, it's time now we set ourselves up. I think in terms of the older crowd, you know, Shane will know he's of the vintage when rugby became professional in Ireland, well, it became professional in the world, and then 5 years later it became professional in Ireland, and all of our senior players had gone across to play in the UK. You know, that seems to be where Irish rugby is with women's at the moment. You know, if you look down through the clubs of the ladies, of the women playing at the weekend, you'll see a lot of them are playing in the UK, which reminds me of kind of 1996, 97, 98 kind of time before the IRFU kind of introduced a professional programme in Ireland. But again, you know, one of the reasons why boys rugby has succeeded over here is because we get to see those professionals when we're going for a shop, when we're buying a coffee. You know, they're around, they're in the locality. That needs to be more visible.
Yeah. And Shane is still with us. Shane, one thing that I have noticed from being involved in lots of different sports with lots of different clubs is that when a club and a sport realises the value of women and start including them in things, it makes for a better club. So not only are they doing things in the club and coaching and bringing players through, they're also members. So you have this whole group of people that you can bring into the club to be members of your club and to make it a better functioning club as well.
There is absolutely no doubt about that. My own club, Blackrock Rugby Club, I was there when the women's team really started and got going, and the activity and the energy they brought to the club was absolutely immense. And he said it dead right, is that the female members of the club are, you know, they're the people who need to get involved in this and need to be part of it. And because when they do start getting in and start getting involved in the teams, it just, there's, as I say to you, there's just so much more to it. And the good of having every part of the membership all involved, like my own daughters, I've been coaching underage. They're now 19 and they both played their first senior game in club rugby last week, and they love it. It's absolutely fantastic. See, development of the game has to continue absolutely everywhere, and that needs both sides of the membership of the club to be involved in that.
Yeah, because otherwise it doesn't reflect the society that we're living in. Lisa Fallon is Correct. Here with me as well, and she's nodding along there to everything that both of you are saying.
Yeah, it's funny. Fiona Coughlin was my daughter's school teacher, and my daughter played soccer and Gaelic football, and Fiona honestly did everything in her power to get her to play. And I was like, oh God, I didn't see where we could add another sport in the calendar. But and you talk about, Shane talks about, the lads talk about that visibility piece, and it is so important. Like, Fiona was such an advocate for women's rugby by just her presence in the school and the energy that she brings. But you know, it is so important to have that. Not inclusivity is the wrong word now, because I think we're gone beyond that mm-hmm. now. I think what really strikes me about the conversation is the two lads just being so proactive in terms of understanding and bringing, you know, wanting women to be in and have that place in sport. Because if you tap into the other half of the population in this country, we're only going to get 100% better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think as well, what you're trying to get at, Lisa, there, it's equality of opportunity. So like Joe's daughters and Shane's daughters, if they want to go and play rugby, there's a team for them. And for many years, there wasn't that opportunity for women in so many different sports. So to see it now growing in rugby is brilliant. And Joe, you're probably going to have to change your target now, because you seem to be hitting those goals pretty easily.
Well, you know, we have a lot of clubs across Dublin, right? And the rest of the country. You know, everyone needs to have half their members as girls, right? Or, you know, between a third and a half their members. It helps subscriptions, it helps the finances, it helps the club, it helps everything you just said here. And, you know, there is a role then to try and go out and help some of our neighbours, you know, get up to a standard. We're doing well at the moment. You know, let's talk about this in 3 years' time and see if we've managed to hold on to those successes. But, you know, we need to, as a group of clubs, as a team of clubs, as a province, we need to get to a standard where these numbers are kind of replicated across, and we have a very sustainable program of girls coming out and growing into youths and growing into senior women, and create a success and create a, and eventually create a professional environment where girls have the option to play at the top level at home and with you know, with a reasonable earning capacity.
Well, I think you can't ask for more than that, really, Joe. And what you've done is brilliant. We have a text in. Can you wish Tipperary women's rugby team the best of luck against Shane's club Blackrock on Sunday in Thurlest in their first AAL Cup game ever? That's from Brian Scanlon, the PRO of Thurlest. Shane, what do you think of that?
I hope they enjoy the game. I won't quite be wishing them luck.
Right. Well, look, guys, both of you, thank you so much for contributing to this conversation. I think it's going to be a really valuable one. I'd say there'll be a few people getting in touch with you, Joe, as well, and no doubt I'll be talking to you again in the future. Shane, I'll be talking to you again soon as well, no doubt too. Thanks so much, guys. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We had a huge weekend for women's football last weekend when Shelburne pipped Piemont at the post to claim the Women's National League title. Well, this weekend, they will be going for the double. They're taking on Wexford Utes in the Women's FAI Cup final. Lisa Fallon is still with me, and we are going to look ahead to that game. Look, Lisa, it set up to be a cracker. Shells did play Wexford last weekend. They were 3-0 up, but went back to 3-2. Can we read much into that game?
No, I wouldn't think so. And yes, I would in some respects. I know that's a really on the fence answer, but you know, I was really surprised to see Wexford 3-0 down in that game. You know, they conceded from a set piece, two set pieces actually, and the penalty. But I think once you could see what was happening in Greenogue, and I'm sure the news filtered across, Wexford probably, you know, maybe turned a screw, maybe went into the game with a little bit of an eye on Sunday. And despite what they would say, I think it's very difficult when you know you're not in contention to win the league. And, you know, 8 days later, you're going to be in a cup final against the same team. Deep down in the back of your mind, there is a little bit of one eye on, mm-hmm. on that.
You're not going to show all your aces, Lisa. You're not going to show all your aces.
No, and you know what? There might be a little bit of players just making sure they're okay for that game, the one that matters to them. So, but listen, it was. I think Sunday's game is going to be an absolute belter. I think it really is. Shells obviously now going for the double, probably weren't favourites on the night, but just the way it transpired with Galway's win over Piemont, I mean, it was just phenomenal. It was great viewing, actually, on TGR. It was unbelievable viewing. But I do think Wexford always had their eye on this. And I distinctly remember last year doing the game, the cup final, and Kylie Murphy was on co-coms for radio, I think, and I was on for TV. And she was broken not being on the pitch. And there's, you know, she's such a brilliant player, and I know how much it will mean to them all, but a great opportunity for Shells to go and do the double, and a great opportunity for Wexford to make sure they get some silverware out of this season, because Wexford Utes have a really, really good team. So I think it's going to be an absolute belter of a game.
Yeah, it is set up like that. And, you know, they're two really evenly matched teams. The league was really keenly contested as well. And all these teams, they were up there as well, with Piemont, who ended up finishing second. But if we were just to look at the experience that's in that Wexford team, you know, obviously led by Kylie Murphy, as you said as well, but they are a team who absolutely know what they're about. They have that cup final experience as well, and they just have that kind of dogged determination too, Lisa.
Yeah, they do, but they also have players in that team that know how to win, that have experience of winning trophies. And, you know, the fact that they beat Piemont in the semi-final 3-1, I think it was, after extra time. And, you know, Ciara Rossiter has been absolutely brilliant for them this season. Aveen Clancy has been excellent. You know, Sinead Taylor, when she's on the pitch, you know she's just such a proven goal scorer at this level. They've got players that can come into the game if they don't start and can change it. But the Kylie Murphy, Ellen Malloy partnership for Wexford this year has been a joy to watch. The partnership between the two of them has been brilliant, and I know, you know, you stick Pearl Slattery into that mix now on Sunday, and you know, you look at you know, Ciara Grant's had an unbelievable season for Shells as well this year. I'm so excited by this game and the matchups, and it's going to be it's going to be a cracker.
It'll be one worth tuning in for. Call it.
Oh, God, tough one. I think Shells have been brilliant this year, and I think they've got a really good squad, especially like you look at the likes of Noel Murray, Saoirse Noonan, and you know, these types of players. But I, you know, I just feel there's a bit of a bite about Wexford for this one, because they'd be very disappointed with the league campaign. And yeah, I just, for some reason, I just have a feeling for Wexford, but it's going to be a difficult one to call.
Well, the good news is, for anyone that is interested in it, it will be on RTE television as well on Sunday evening at around 5:30. I'll be there on the sideline, and I absolutely cannot wait. Lisa Fallon, do stay with me for another few minutes. We are going to talk to Jeff Shepherd now. He's got his eye on all American sports. And as usual, Shep, there is an awful lot happening. We will get to Aaron Rodgers' toe in a second, but I'm actually going to start, first of all, just given everything that's happening here as well with COVID, there's a huge amount of interest in it still. What is going to happen with Thanksgiving? How are they going to approach it in the NFL?
Yeah, Marie, so, you know, we're starting to see some case pick up around the country. And even in some of the locker rooms with the NFL. And so, you know, obviously Aaron Rodgers was out, Ben Roethlisberger was out, some other, you know, players have been out. So they want to, you know, go back to, you know, masking in the facilities, you know, players being tested a couple of times a week just to, you know, try to, you know, separate any players that could potentially, you know, be positive. And maybe they don't even know it yet, you know, from spreading the virus. What I find, which is really interesting, is the NFL has actually been reviewing some of the, you know, in-house video that the teams have at their facilities to check and see, are the players who are supposed to be masking wearing their mask? And if they're not, you know, we might start to see some more fines levied at the teams and at individual players if they're not following the proper COVID protocols, which I find interesting is the word that I use. But, you know, that's a little bit Big Brotherish, if you ask me as well.
Yeah, it does seem like it could be a recipe for disaster, just given all of the controversies over the last while as well with the different COVID protocols that were in place. Okay, enough about COVID now. What about Aaron Rodgers' toe? This is what I really want to know. What happened to him? I know he's injured. He's not telling us anything. Do you think he just likes playing these mind games with the people that are obsessed with him, me included?
Oh my God, 100%. You know, I mean, like, he absolutely clearly enjoys this. But if you recall back to our discussion last week, he did not hurt his toe in California while he was visiting Shailene Woodley, allegedly, you know, the week that he was out, because he didn't go out there. So he did another interview this week, and he missed practice, and he basically said he's got a toe injury, and that's really all he would say, other than he believes he's going to be good to go in the game this weekend.
We've lost Jeff.
Look,
oh, you're back.
He didn't play
back,
incredibly well last week. Oh, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, so Marie, he, can you hear me?
I can. Yep. No, we're
so
lost,
he was injured. He was
gonna,
injured. You
we're
know,
gonna,
or
we're
going to
leave
out.
It, Shep, because yeah, you're breaking up. You're coming in and out. So anyone that is interested in Aaron Rodgers' toe is going to have to go on Twitter and find out exactly what has happened to him. Nobody seems to know, though. Lisa Fallon, thank you so much for coming in. So I did have a competition at the very start of the show. Tickets for Ireland versus Argentina. Lots of people interested in this, no doubt. Well, the answer is Felipe Contamponi, and the winner is Mark Monaghan from Mullingar. Congratulations to Mark. Okay, that is all that we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow. So much to look forward to, a lot to get through. The Ireland team will be announced, and we'll be building up to all of the live sport as well. So do please tune in. Tara Kumar is up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavor. 2FM.